Magical Mara Designs is proud to sponsor this episode of the WDW Review podcast. If you're looking for custom, comfortable Mickey and Minnie ears, check out our designs or send us a message at magicalmaradesigns.com.
Hello, welcome to the WDW Review. I'm your host, Chris Malik, and I'm joined by my good friend, Tim Van Swole. Tim, how are you doing?
I'm great.
Got you up really early on a Sunday morning with a research project again. What am I doing with you? It's summertime. You needed time just to sleep and relax.
No, I've had enough of that. I needed to get up and get going, have something to do.
Right? This is a bizarre time in everyone's life where you're either getting way too little or way too much of everything in your life. If it's exercise, if it's sleep, if it's work, if it's, you know, whatever, there's no in the middle anymore. It's all extremes, correct?
That is an extreme truth right there, right? Yeah. That's the world.
So this is the most important question. So you got your coffee cup nearby?
Oh yeah.
What are you drinking in your coffee cup today, Tim?
I got coffee.
Okay.
A blend that you got me actually hooked on, so it's about all I drink now. It's a Pete's brand Major Dickinson's blend.
It is good, isn't it?
It is good, yeah.
You know, I was thinking about that. I had some this morning myself. It's all the right things you like in coffee. It's a dark roast, but it's not bitter. It's really good, isn't it?
Oh yeah, it's perfect.
The only problem is I've had two. So in my cup right now is just some tea. So if I have more than two or three at 7 o'clock in the morning, I get a little shaky. So share something good. What do you got going on in your life, buddy?
We've had some really good things just change for our family over the last couple of weeks. You know, we've been through a lot, as everybody has through the last several months, but some things have changed for the good, and it's working out really well. Amy's started a new job, and she's loving it. She's advancing very quickly through that and has the respect and love of her coworkers and bosses, and everything just feels like it's going really well. I'm getting really ready to go back to school, which, you know, it's going to be interesting going back. I'm looking forward to it, going back, seeing my coworkers, working face to face with kids, but it's going to be a completely different experience. So I think that's a good too. So
okay, so the think it's a good, so Tim is a teacher, so is it equal parts apprehension, hesitancy, anxiety, and excitement, or give me the parts of that?
I don't know. It's maybe apprehension, just because I don't know how it's going to work out. You know, it's hard enough to get middle school kids, sixth graders, to cooperate with the simplest of things on a regular basis. Yeah. Like, you know, we're being told we have to really emphasize walking down the right side of the hallway and, you know, always staying to the right side and avoiding contact. We've tried to do that ever since I've been a teacher for 26 years. It's not something new.
Yeah.
They've just not done it.
Yeah.
And now suddenly they're going to. So, you know, like, no, we really mean it now.
Yeah.
Like, okay, so what changed? Are they going to be fearful of COVID to actually follow our rules? Or are we still going to be beating our heads against the wall? So
sure.
It's that kind of stuff. It goes with the territory. I wouldn't have taught, you know, middle school for 26 years if I couldn't do it. So no, I'm just securing that special place in heaven for myself that everybody tells me there is.
Right? There is a special place, especially for teachers right now. There's a special place in heaven designed for you.
And high school teachers and elementary teachers, they always say, oh, I could never teach middle school. So I guess we're a special breed.
Well, it's not like I've got the knowledge of the ages by no means, but back in March and April when we were plotting a path to get the golf course open, our logistical thoughts were, how are we going to keep the staff safe? How are the customers going to be respectful of this? How are we going to sanitize the carts? And all these barriers would literally keep me up at night, and I'd be like, this is going to be a train wreck. But you know what? Like, day one, it was day two, it was day three. And you know what? It worked. And actually now it's not nearly the terror that I made it out to be in my mind. And yeah. I think I'm just a little ahead of the curve because honestly, we had to open up earlier in the spring. So when the teachers come around right now, it does seem insurmountable.
Yeah.
And I know there'll be challenges, but I know it is possible. The challenge that I have is I deal with adults. And if an adult gets out of line, I was joking with Tamara, you know, I can swing the righteous hammer, you know, and I could go and make a correction. But sometimes kids are just different and may not understand. And I certainly understand that in terms of, I know this is not the show we plan on today for second graders and third graders. I am a little concerned for just the teacher's sanity trying to control that crowd with masks all day. But we're going to make it work, you know, so.
Yeah. Yeah, that is definitely I couldn't do it. I'm grateful to be a middle school teacher at this point. So
this has been the Sunday morning talk with just Tim and Chris over our coffee. Nothing to do with Disney at this point. So, no, we're just joking. Actually, we got a really cool show for you guys today. And we always lead the show with something that's good in our lives because honestly, it's our time to connect with everybody and we love hearing it. If you listen to this, you're already familiar with what's good in your life. So if you're thinking, where's the Disney? Oh, it's coming up. And today we're going to go and talk about something you may not have heard before. But before that, Tim and I have a connection with another city in the United States. So, and this is going to lead into the show. And my connection is, well, it's home to my favorite baseball club since 1985, but it's also 4.5 hours drive from Chicago. And it's one of the coolest family vacation destinations. And I'm talking about the city of St. Louis. So we started going there years ago and bringing the whole dogs, a whole mallet crew piled 3 or 4 dogs in a van and twins that were like 4 years old. And where can we go that's like within like a reasonable drive where the kids aren't killing us and going crazy in the car that takes pets, that has enough things to do in the city? And truthfully, we fell in love with the city of St. Louis. Specifically, we stay in a town, little town called Chesterfield. And are you familiar with Chesterfield, Tim?
Oh, yeah. When I was in college in St. Louis, we went to Chesterfield Mall all the time for just go and hang out and walk around and just get out of the dorm.
Correct. Chesterfield's just west of the city limits. But it's beautiful and it has all the amenities you could want. But it's close enough to downtown St. Louis. That's the nice thing about the city of St. Louis is if you couldn't obviously put a pillowcase over it on a map, but like it's compact and all the attractions are located in a reasonable distance downtown. But as you spread out, you get to things like Defiance, which, you know, I'll let you research what's in Defiance, Missouri. It's really cool. They have a Six Flags theme park. They have, you know, magnificent things like the Arch. They have Grant's Farm, which is an unbelievably cool destination. They have the Anheuser-Busch Brewery Tour. They have City Museum. And if you've never seen City Museum and you've got kids and you're in the Midwest, shame on you. Go and Google the word City Museum. And I guarantee you are not prepared for what displays on your computer for such a cool thing. Now, right now, I'm not too sure how that works out in terms of sanitizing, but go check out City Museum. As well as all the other amazing sites. You know, it held a World's Fair. It's got an amazing zoo. So anyways, I'm spouting off my love for the city of St. Louis.
Ted Drews. You can't forget Ted Drews.
You know what? I got my coupon still. I bought a Tervis mug, and inside the Tervis mug, it said, this is good for one free mini concrete. So I'm saving it. It might be a few years old by now, but it's still good. It's still good. Yes, and fabulous custard, fabulous Italian food, fried ravioli. Now you got me going. It's Sunday morning, and now I miss it, all right? But what's your connection to the city of St. Louis, buddy?
Well, when I was a kid, we didn't go on a whole lot of vacations. And it's kind of like with you, you know, like as a kid, I wanted to go on a vacation. I don't know if it was due to my parents' work schedule or just money situations, but I started begging them to go to St. Louis. And even though I'm a Cubs fan, I was, you know, born into it, you know, it's a legacy kind of thing. In the early 80s, the Cardinals were so exciting to watch. Like, you know, Willie McGee and Vince Coleman and Ozzie Smith, I just fell in love with those guys. I mean, Vince Coleman got on base and he was going to steal a base every time he got
guaranteed.
On there.
Guaranteed.
Oh, man, it was awesome when Ozzie with his back flips, and it was exciting to watch the Cardinals. So a Cubs fan fell in love with the Cardinals, and I just started begging my parents, can we go to St. Louis? Can we go to St. Louis? And eventually we did. I thought the arch looked like the coolest thing in the world. And when I found out you could actually go in it, it just made me want to go. So we went on a vacation and I just kind of fell in love with the place. So when I went to college, I had thought about being a pharmacist anyway. So they have St. Louis College of Pharmacy in St. Louis. So that's where I went for my freshman year. It turned out I didn't want to be a pharmacist after all. I realized, you know, like, I don't want to count pills for a living. Anybody that does, I don't mean to offend you, but that's just not my personality. So I'd always been on the fence about teaching because I kind of wanted to coach too. So that was my backup plan. So I went home and went to community college for a year to just kind of reset my educational path, and then transferred back down to the St. Louis area and went to Southern Illinois University at Edwardsville, which is in the Metro East area around St. Louis. So I could be an in-state school and still hang with my friends from St. Louis College of Pharmacy on the weekend. And so that was just kind of what drew me there. I got to do all sorts of things. Cahokia Mounds is another one of my favorite places in the area, on the Illinois side of the river, where you can explore the Cahokia Native American culture.
Yeah, really cool. There are so many things that this city has, but I think what drew me to it was the fact that it's steeped in American history. If it wasn't the steamers going up and down from Red Wing, Minnesota, all the way down to New Orleans, and just cruising the Mississippi, you know, delivering goods, and the legendary stories of Mark Twain, and really, honestly, the town of St. Charles, which is just north of St. Louis, it's steeped in American history. And here's where we're going to start talking about Walt Disney. So as people would know, or maybe not, Walt was born in Chicago and spent the first few years of his life in Chicago. But at a certain point in his life, I believe it was 5, and I could be mistaken, he had to go and relocate to Marceline, Missouri with his parents. So really, for the formative years, for his kids' years, where the impressions were set, he grew up as, is this right, as a Missourian? Is that the word? Is a Missourian, Tim? Let's go with it.
You mean Missourian?
Right. So he grew up in Missouri, but he always loved the city of St. Louis. So that just sets the backdrop. Now, other things that Walt loved, he loved Americana. He loved history. So you can see kind of we're getting to something right here. And what we want to talk about today is, I don't know if you'd realize this, but there was almost, and we touched upon this maybe 200 episodes ago, there was going to be a theme park that Walt Disney designed in the downtown, the new the heart of the new revitalized, you know, commerce area in St. Louis. And it was going to be called Walt Disney's, Tim, help me out with it. What's the name?
Riverfront Square.
The Riverfront Square. And it was going to be an indoor 5-story domed theme park in the middle of America. And everyone's like, what? You know, I mean, when you read about this stuff, you realize that Walt's famous for his animation studios. Walt's famous for his vision and his creation in Disneyland. Walt's famous for his Florida project and the purchase of all the land in Florida. But as a company, you know, rapid expansion occurred, and Walt was the most popular person in America in this time. And they were like, we need this visionary to help revitalize our project. St. Louis wasn't the only place. There was talks of expansion in Niagara Falls area. There was talks after Walt was gone to the Washington, D.C. area. There was talks of expansion to a ski resort. And there was talks of expansion in many different places. But today specifically, we're going to come to the city of St. Louis and discuss all the history. So, Tim, we had you actually research a lot of this. So you want to take us through the history of this?
Sure.
Let's do it.
So it all kind of started off, I mean, it eventually did become that big all-encompassing project that you were discussing. And notice you said it was Walt Disney's Riverfront Square. And I think eventually that was what at least Disney's vision was for this. But it really started out as a much simpler project. What was going on in St. Louis was that they were getting ready to celebrate their bicentennial as a city. So 1964 was going to be their bicentennial, And that was actually why they started building the Gateway Arch and Busch Stadium downtown. They wanted to revitalize the riverfront because it had kind of become, you know, not a great place in the city. And so those projects were started as part of the lead up to their bicentennial celebration in the early 60s. They decided at some point that they wanted to include some sort of film experience that would tell the history of St. Louis a little bit, you know, focus on its past as well as its present. And, you know, like you said, who's the most, you know, important person in the country at that time that would have a hometown connection kind of to Missouri and St. Louis, Walt Disney. So they reached out to him specifically about producing that film. That was their initial thought. And so the CCRC was the name of the group. That it stands for Civic Center Redevelopment Corporation, that reached out to Walt and asked if he would be interested in that. And he contemplated it. And he really wasn't that interested in the actual film. I mean, that was fine, but he was really kind of in a city development mind. I think Walt was already kind of formulating plans for his Epcot project. He, you know, he was done with building Disneyland. He was in the midst of planning for the New York World's Fair exhibits that Disney was company was involved in. And so I think the idea of this land that was set aside and what they were trying to do with it, that really drew him in more. He was excited about, like, well, what could we do with this land? So he decided that he was going to dig a little deeper and meet with the people, and it turned into his involvement in a much bigger way than just the film.
He was almost underwhelmed with the challenge.
Yeah.
It was like telling this creative genius, well, we just need you to design a movie. And he was like, that bores me, you know? Yeah. I need something way more challenging. I've got an idea, you know? And all of a sudden, it was out of the bag and it was running. So
yeah. And a lot of the things that we're going to talk about, you'll see, you know, if you're familiar with Disney, you're going to see some elements that you can see where they clearly led to other projects in the future. Like initially, this plan was to have this film experience being in about 1,000 foot or 1,000 seat Circle Vision theater. And it would be about a 15-minute film and run on a continuous loop pretty much. And which, you know, obviously those exist in Disney now. So, and that would have been fine. But like you said, Walt was kind of underwhelmed that could be part of a project, but he'd like to do something much bigger. So he kind of inserted himself in that. So after meeting with the CCRC, Walt was appointed as a consultant on this. And actually he and Roy both went to meet with them and kind of just listened to the whole spiel. And so they went from there. Immediately after the meeting, though, Walt must have gotten excited because he appointed one of his guys, Buzz Price, to do a feasibility study on the project. So how many people does this are potentially going to come and visit this? How much money are they going to spend? What is the potential profitability for this project?
Because he's a businessman. So let's get that right too. He's benevolent and he is a philanthropist, but first and foremost, Walt's a businessman. So yes, we want children and parents to enjoy together, but it has to succeed and it has to be able to pay for itself. And there'll be a premier experience everywhere, but it needs to fulfill its business quotas. So exactly. So, and we should probably discuss. So if you've never visited the city of St. Louis, it's moderate temperatures, but I've visited in December and in January, February, March, and it's cold and it gets snow. So it's not like Florida or California where it's 12 months and you can go every day outside minus the rain. There are just simply times of the year in the city of St. Louis where it's just not manageable to be outside. So there needed to be some additional layering,
yeah,
specifically 5 stories of layering, you know, covered by a roof to make this work. So
yeah. So the project was it. In St. Louis today, I envision it would have been located where Laclede's Landing is in St. Louis today, I think. I didn't research that specifically, but knowing downtown St. Louis. It was supposed to have been several blocks to the north of where the Arch and the and Busch Stadium were at that time. Busch Stadium's a little bit been relocated a little further to the south from where it was originally now, but that's kind of where I envisioned that it would have been. And it was supposed to have been like a couple of blocks, you know, big. It was huge. It was going to be a huge project.
Nowhere on the scope of a Disneyland, though, or obviously, no. Or Florida, because it was going to be all contained in this building. So right. Think of it as a building, not Epcot as you would envision underneath the dome.
But. Like a huge mall, like a big multi-story mall is kind of what I picture it. You know, when I hear dome, I picture like a stadium, you know, and I don't think that it was like that. I think it was more like just a really large multi-level mall.
Correct.
So, I'm sorry, I got to look down at my notes a little bit. So at this time, Walton, as I said before, they were heavily involved in their plannings for the projects for the 1964-65 New York World's Fair. So they were a little hesitant to give any direct answers to whether they wanted to get involved in this project. But Walt really wanted to do it, and he wanted to do the whole thing. He wanted to be really responsible because, I said, he envisioned himself kind of a city planner at this point. So he wanted to take on the grand project. There was a press conference in November of 1963. Oh, I forgot to mention that initial meeting with the planning committee happened in March of 63, and that feasibility report came back in August from Buzz Price. And he said it could be moderately profitable. So that was enough for Walt to kind of say, all right, well, let's give this a shot. And maybe with me planning it, maybe it'll be even more. So they had estimated that it I'll talk about that later. Those estimates came later. So he began to get involved in this project. They had a press conference where he kind of laid out his vision for Riverfront Square. People were really excited about the project. And it's Walt Disney. He's going to be involved in this project. And it would be a presence in the Midwest for Disney, and that was exciting to people. They were really excited until Walt said no alcohol was going to be served in the facility.
Okay. Let me just pause you right there, Tim. So if you, again, have never been to the city of St. Louis, St. Louis is synonymous with Anheuser-Busch products and Budweiser. And when I say synonymous, if you drive around town, it's palpable. Everything is red. Everything is red and white. The city of the brand of Anheuser-Busch literally sponsors schools and hospitals, and August Busch, you know, his name's on a lot of things. So the city functions on beer. And so, you know, I say that kind of crudely, but in a way, it's true. And the city signs, for heaven's sakes, are on the expressway, are red, you know. And yes, the Cardinals, but yes, for Budweiser products as well, too. So I'm sorry.
And that's exactly right. So August Busch Jr., who was the head of the Anheuser-Busch company at that time, had the same idea. Like, I don't know that we have an exact quote, but he basically said that any man who would build something like this and then not serve beer and liquor is crazy. Now, Admiral Joe Fowler, who was one of Disney's like guys back then, he was a construction guy that Disney had kind of taken at when he was planning Disneyland and used him to help build like the Mark Twain.
Yes, important for the canals, important for the rivers of America. Yes, very important.
Yeah, so he had been involved in that project, and he was at this meeting, evidently, and he seems to be the originator of this story, because Admiral Joe Fowler said that after that meeting, we got on a plane and never went back. Now, Fowler may never have gone back, but this is all part of Disney mythology, that this was what killed the project, because Disney kept working on the project for months. It was not dead in his mind. So that I don't know how that got started, but that seems to be the accepted story for so long is like, well, why didn't they build the project in St. Louis? Oh, because of the alcohol, and that was it. So,
and I believe that to be the case for many years was it was a fight. It was a disagreement between two heavyweights. We're going to serve beer. Nope, we're not going to serve beer. Until you dig a little deeper. So, and I think I actually told you, oh, I'm pretty sure this is what happened. And I learned differently. So interesting.
Right. And what's interesting, that meeting took place in November of 63. It was that same month that Walt got in a plane piloted by himself and flew down to Florida and was flying over like Ocala and all the areas down in Florida. And that was when he decided this is going to be the location of our next Disney project. And I think that kind of fuels the mythology of the St. Louis, you know, project being killed because of the timing of that. Mm-hmm. People think like, well, yeah, he said, I'm not going back. And then he hopped in a plane and went to Florida and found an alternative to the St. Louis site. But in reality, he was thinking that he could do both projects at the same time, which is baffling. Like, these would be two huge projects. St. Louis would be, like you said, nowhere on the scale of what Disney World Magic Kingdom was going to turn out to be, but it was going to be huge. But he really planned to do both at the same time.
The precedence has been set for this. The 1964 yeah. World's Fair, too, is occurring around the same time. And he's building attractions and using them as a test stage to go and then use those attractions in his park. So he's a multitasker and has always had several pots simmering at the same time.
Yeah. Okay. He had grand visions and don't get in his way. So don't say no. He was going to try to make them happen. So that's kind of the beauty of who Walt was. So that was in November of 63. Then in March of 64, Walt held another press conference where he refined his plans for the five-story enclosed facility that would eventually be Riverfront Square, or at least was planned to. It was going to have at least one story that would be underground. So they knew that they could go down like 112 feet underground in their excavation for this project. So one to two stories of this five-story facility were going to be underground as well. He planned all that out. He even made a compromise on the alcohol issue. So he had proposed that they would have special area or areas in the facility in Riverfront Square that would be adult-only locations where they could serve. It would be like lounges that mm-hmm. they could serve alcohol, but it would be served there and they would be consumed there, and there would be no alcohol in the attractions part of the Riverfront Square project. His big proposal was that they would have like an observation deck kind of up on the top of the building where they would have like views of the arch and stuff, so people could go there kind of as a lounge and have it. It would be accessible only through like special elevators, so they could control the flow of who was coming and going from there. And August Bush and the other planners, they agreed to this compromise. So that was good. So for people to say that Walt would absolutely not consider alcohol at all, well, yes and no. So there was this compromise. Mm-hmm. So they were going to move forward with it. Sorry. So Walt had it, Imagineer Marvin Davis start to draw up plans for this. And it turned out to be about 13 pages of blueprints of plans for the project. They estimated that it would cost about $40 million in, you know, 1960s money. That doesn't sound like a whole lot today.
No,
but,
no.
But by those standards, I'm sure that was a pretty big number. And they estimated that they would see about 25,000 guests a day on average. So with that number of people going, the profitability was definitely there. Mm-hmm. So you could make money off of that for sure. The general plan that would be that there would be two separate themed areas of the facility. It would be about 600 feet long, 3.5 acres total that this would cover. One half of the building would be themed around St. Louis and what it was like around the turn of the century. So around the beginning of the 1900s.
So old St. Louis, historical St. Louis. Okay.
Right. And the other half would be themed around New Orleans, because Walt was not just about St. Louis, but he really had a love of the Mississippi River and the whole culture in general. He was a huge fan of Mark Twain as well. He'd visited Hannibal, Mark Twain's hometown, numerous times throughout his childhood. So tying New Orleans into the project seemed logical as well. Plus, Walt had been privy to seeing some previews of some of the different things for the New York World's Fair, and New Orleans had a pavilion that was going to be in the New York World's Fair that really got his attention, and he really thought that was pretty cool. So it started his wheels turning on including some things about New Orleans in that project as well. So that half of the facility was going to be themed in New Orleans around the early 1800s, like pre-Civil War era. So old New Orleans as well.
So, Tim, you've got all these great facts. Can I drop in just a piece of knowledge that I have, which may or may not be 100% factual? Never Absolutely. Let the facts distort a good story, correct, Tim, at this point?
Of course, yeah. Say it like you mean it, and people will believe you.
Right, so this is the honest-to-goodness truth, as I say that with crossed fingers. So, as I understand, one of Walt's goals when the war was over, when World War One was over, was he was going to plan to meet his buddy and their dogs and travel upstream and downstream on the Mississippi River. And that was like their, hey, you know what? We're out. We're back in the States. Let's enjoy life. Let's do this. It was only until his buddy became engaged and his dog on passage over passed away. The whole plan was ruined. But his plan was, when we get back to the States, we're traveling the river together. And you know, you realize how much he loved it. He loved the thought. He loved the romance of the idea of the river.
Yeah. No, I read that too. In fact, this is a little unorthodox, but I think I'm going to drop in my my sources here in the middle of the podcast so yes. I don't forget to do it. So I read that article. I think that was specifically from an article by the Disney History Institute.
Correct.
They have a whole website. So that absolutely was the case. I also used Jim Corcus, your old buddy, who's been on the show before. He writes many wonderful articles for Mouse Planet on the internet. And so he had an article about Riverfront Square, the Disney project that never happened. Mm-hmm. So I used a lot of information from Jim Corcus. And also, Lou Mangiello did a project on unbuilt Disney projects. He did a podcast on that. So I listened to that as well. So those are three of the main sources that I got information from for this project. So as a historian, I always want to make sure that I give credit to the sources Sure. where I got my information, because I certainly we couldn't do this without them.
We got it through St. Louis Magazine. We got it through the Orlando Sentinel. We got it through a variety of sources. I think what really piqued our interest in a lot of these sources was the blueprints, and we'll talk about that. There were blueprints that were auctioned off a few years ago, which actually highlighted, I mean, in fantastic descriptive pictures and words of what this was going to look like.
I wonder if that was those 13 pages that that was drawn up by Marvin Davis.
You know what? I don't have the full information on that, but you know me in auctions, so. Slightly out of my price point, but not much. And if you got me going, I don't know. I just might do something stupid.
It sticks in my mind. I think they sold for like $27,000 or something like that. So
a little bit out of my budget.
But. Yeah. Especially if you bid yourself up.
Correct. So I was at 22, but some smart guy kept on going higher. So anyways.
All right. So so that was the plan. The two themed, half New Orleans, half St. Louis. The ceiling design inside this and the lighting were going to make it look like it was a cloud filled sky actually, in the common area of the Riverfront Square, and they were going to pipe in ambient music, including the clopping of horse hooves on pavement and the period music that was appropriate for the area. So kind of imagine walking down Main Street USA at one of the Disney parks, and it'd be kind of like that. So. At this point, I've got a whole bunch of attractions to kind of mention that they were considering putting into this. Now, none of this was ever detailed. Some of these kind of came and went. Some of them kind of got fused together. But I just kind of want to give a rundown of some of the things they thought about including in the Riverfront Square. Is that okay?
It's perfect. And pay particular attention to what's going to go in here, because you know what? A good idea never truly dies. Sometimes it gets repurposed, and sometimes it'll appear again in different formations. So see if you recognize anything.
Yeah. All right. So the first one I have on my list was a bayou boat ride. It was going to be a boat ride through a Louisiana swamp featuring alligators and other wildlife from that area. You would, at some point, you would travel. There would be a drop that would take you down a waterfall, and then somehow it was going to take you back up the waterfall. I don't know how you do that in a boat, but they were going to do that somehow. So you would go up and down this waterfall in this boat ride. So another one was the Jean Lafitte adventure ride, and I had to look up who Jean Lafitte was. He was a famous pirate, I guess, from the Gulf of Mexico region that they were going to include. And so this would be a walkthrough attraction featuring this French pirate of the Gulf of Mexico and other pirates. And it would take visitors on a kind of a tour of a pirate ship. And as you can kind of imagine, it was sort of a precursor to Pirates of the Caribbean. And actually, none of these ever actually got built, but they fused those two projects together to become basically Pirates of the Caribbean later on. The boat ride, the bayou boat ride.
For sure. They're like kissing cousins right there, and you could see how they got melded.
Exactly. A haunted house. Ding, ding, ding. This was going to feature a room of illusions and a stretching room. Some of the ghosts would be themed to specific ghost stories that were from Missouri. So they were going to have this haunted house attraction as well. They were going to have a French Quarter of New Orleans included in this as one of the attractions. It would feature restaurants and a live show and shops surrounded by kind of a diorama of the city at the time, featured during that period. It included a full-sized steamboat on an underground – well, I don't know if it was underground. I imagine underground, but in an indoor lake. Mm-hmm. So they were going to have this full-sized steamboat included in that.
I'm looking at I would say the blueprint for that right now, and seeing that it's surrounded by the benches, the gas lights, in an area that has St. Louis style streets. So fabulous. And of course, if anything would resemble old St. Louis, you'd have to have a steamboat.
When I was reading about this and doing research on this, that stuff, if anybody's ever been to the Museum of Science and Industry in Chicago, there's an area near the ice cream shop that is kind of a period location. I'm not sure exactly what period, but where you're like walking down old Chicago on Cobblestone Street. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's got different buildings on the side, the Berghoff German restaurant, and it ends with like a silent movie theater that it actually is showing like a loop of silent movies. That's kind of what I picture this would have kind of been like.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I had the exact same vision in my mind when I was looking at this. Like, that sounds very familiar. I think I've seen this before.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay.
Go ahead. Did you have something?
No. Good.
Okay. Another attraction was the Circle Vision Theater, the thing that they originally brought Walt in to try to do. He was going to include that as part of the bigger project. It would be a 15-minute film depicting a trip down the Mississippi River and possibly a helicopter ride, like, through the arch at the end. So that would have been kind of neat. Another movie theater with a 200-degree screen, and I imagine that kind of as like a precursor to like IMAX sort of thing. And interactive elements to tell the history of St. Louis. It may have featured stories and characters from like the 1904 World's Fair that was held in St. Louis, Mark Twain, Charles Lindbergh, and his Spirit of St. Louis plane. The details of this film were never really fully flushed out, but that was one of the things they talked about. They mentioned the old opera house. Now, I'm not sure if they were talking about like revitalizing some sort of old opera house, or they were going to build something that represented the old opera house of St. Louis or New Orleans. But there was going to be an old opera house location that would feature a live action show similar to the whole Golden Horseshoe Review at Disneyland at the time. But it would be themed to St. Louis, and it would feature, in what was specific about this, he wanted French can-can dancers to be part of this this attraction as well.
Well, that would be synonymous with New Orleans at that point, correct?
Exactly.
Gotcha.
Yeah. They wanted to include some dark rides, kind of like what they have at Disneyland. Specifically, they mentioned maybe even putting Peter Pan's Flight, Snow White's Adventure in there, making a new one that was themed after Pinocchio. But Walt wasn't really sure that he wanted to include his Disney characters in this project. He felt like it might detract from the purpose and the theme.
Yeah,
exactly. So that was mentioned, but they weren't sure whether they were going to go that way or not. But some alternatives to that, if you didn't put Disney characters in there, who might you include in these dark rides? So some of the things that they would considered were a ride through Missouri's caves. You know, I've been to a couple of different ones. Merrimack Caverns was one. In Hannibal, Mark Twain's hometown, they've got Mark Twain Caves. So a ride through these Missouri caves was one possibility. A Native American canoe ride was another one. A water ride featuring legendary characters Davy Crockett and Mike Fink was another possibility.
Like a keelboat type situation, huh, Tim?
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, okay. I think so. Some of the people proposed an attraction based on Frank and Jesse James because they were famously from Missouri. But Walt rejected that one because he didn't want to glorify criminals at all. One idea was that after the 64-65 World's Fair ended, that they would transport I'm going to get it, Great Moments with Mr. Lincoln, and just transport that and then insert that as an attraction in the project as well after the World's Fair ended. They wanted to have audio animatronics included in this that would be aligned with Missouri. A suggestion was having like a Thomas Jefferson and Napoleon talking about the Louisiana Purchase. Will Rogers, John Philip Sousa, Teddy Roosevelt, Charles Lindbergh in his Spirit of St. Louis plane. Also local sports heroes, possibly, although none of them were ever detailed which ones they would include. And this would have been probably set on a revolving theater stage, kind of like what Country Bears Jamboree is. So they would have these audio animatronic figures that would kind of rotate in and out.
Sort of like American Adventure.
Yeah, kind of like that too. Yep. Yeah,
gotcha.
Absolutely. Although I don't think they had that at that point.
No.
But Country Bears was...
But you can see how the formation of the American Adventure looks like Country Bears rising and lowering and you know, shaded areas and curtained areas. Okay.
Yep. Absolutely. So, talked about a Lewis and Clark adventure ride, one specific to Merrimack Caverns, an old water wheel. They even talked about putting an aviary exhibit in there that would be a tribute to John Audubon, the famous bird guy that the Audubon Society was established for. After. So those are all some of the different projects. I'm sure that they had more. Not all of these would have been included, but that was kind of a wish list, I guess, in the early planning stages.
All encompassed inside of a building.
Yeah.
Pretty amazing. And when you think about things like a water ride and a steamboat, but remember, you're talking to Walt Disney, so there's no project that he can't get his mind wrapped around, you know, at this point.
Right.
So, okay. So we've got probably the, and what was the company's name? It was the Economic Redevelopment of St. Louis, something along those lines.
The CCRC, the Civic Center Redevelopment Corporation.
Okay. So we've got them excited about the potential project. We've got Walt and Bush working out a potential partnership for the beer. What happened?
So it really turned out to be, as most business projects are, it's about money. There was a disagreement about who was going to be responsible for what. So you had two different perspectives on this. Disney's perspective is that they would be responsible for everything related to the show, to the attractions, to everything that was going to go inside. That they would pay for that. They would, you know, be responsible for developing it and installing it. But they believe that St. Louis should provide all the infrastructure. They, you know, you're going to build the building, you're going to design the inside of the building, you're going to build the parking garages, you're going to, you know, improve the land, including, you know, traffic flow and all of that stuff, that was all going to be St. Louis's responsibility, and that Disney would just install the show, and that St. Louis would gradually be reimbursed for their costs from the net profits of the project as it went along. And then once St. Louis had been repaid for that, Disney's idea was that Disney would then take full ownership of the project. So that was Disney's perspective. St. Louis's perspective was that they would be responsible for the shell only. that it was, we will give you the shell of the building, and then you were responsible for everything else.
Mm-hmm. So it's a big ask. Now, hindsight's 2020, and it always is. But it's a big ask when you say, we will put the attractions in, we'll design it. We want you to do everything else for us. And if I was the city, I could certainly understand. We're not even sure if this is going to work. You've mastered California, and that's a success. And you've got these other projects brewing, but you're literally asking us to go and develop an entire area for you where you're simply going to provide the innards of the area. It's a big ask. Now, again, hindsight's 2020. And in fact, right now, at even the inflated cost, I don't know if the city wouldn't jump at the opportunity to have something like that, especially considering the centralized location and the proximity to major cities in the Midwest. And frankly, by car travel, because really the city of St. Louis is, it's not smack dab in the middle, but it's
pretty close.
It's dang close, you know, to being smack dab in the middle. It is the gateway to the West, you know. So but I certainly understand that perspective. As it is, the city though saying we're going to provide you the shell. Yeah, I mean, part of the reason that he developed the Florida project was the proximity to all those major expressways in the state and the warm weather. So there was a lot of hurdles and obstacles in Walt's mind why this couldn't work. So so it was a money issue why they just couldn't agree upon this, correct?
Right. And when it comes down to it, from what I understand, it really was probably a difference in about $9 million was all.
Crazy.
And, you know, you hear that today and that's like, oh, well, just do it then.
Correct.
It's no big deal. But to them back then, 1960s, that $9 million is a big deal.
$9 million is a wing of refurbishment right now for one of the resorts that's just under standard budgetary, you know, procedures at this point. So
yeah, that's exactly right. So they worked on this for months, but eventually they just could not come to an agreement. And so in July of 1965, they held a joint press conference between the CCRC and Walt Disney and just said, we can't make it happen. It's just not going to work. We wanted to give you something that would revitalize this area and provide a presence of a Disney, you know, attraction in the Midwest, but we just can't make this go. So the project died on that day.
And so let's just say this. We made a statement earlier, or I don't remember if I did or if you did, but truly good ideas never really die. They sort of get repurposed. And you could see where some of the, you know, the Circle Vision, obviously, and the Pirates ride and the Haunted Mansion ride and the keel boats and things along those lines get repurposed. But did you uncover anything along the lines where, I guess I don't want to say, was there any possibility of that being rekindled in the future? Obviously, land costs and costs along those lines go up, but anything like that, Tim?
I didn't see anything along those lines. Did you come across anything like that?
I did not. I mean, it was only mere speculation. You know, when you have such a good idea like this, knowing how the Disney... But, of course, nowadays, you know, the economy being what it is and tourism being what it is, obviously, that's dead in the water. But you'd like to think that good ideas like this, there's always chances of this in the future. That's mere speculation. There's no factual proof for that. But you can certainly see how some of these ideas were implanted and embedded in other parks around the world.
So. Well, and in reality, it was probably a good thing that they could then focus all of their attention on development of the Florida project then after that. Because my guess is Walt was the only person involved in the company that thought that they could successfully do both at the same time. I mean, everybody would have done it because Walt wanted to, but it really would have been a challenge, I believe, for them to do Florida and St. Louis concurrently. Develop those projects. So, and the fact that Walt died so soon after this, like, I mean, July 1965, it wasn't very long until he wasn't with them anymore. So I think that the fact that it was going to be a drain on their resources to do that at the same time as Florida, and the fact that Walt died, they were more interested in making sure the decision for Florida and eventually I synonymously end up saying Edcot and Epcot anymore now. So, and Epcot, that was really what they were trying to make a reality as a tribute and a legacy for Walt. So I think that St. Louis project just died.
Well, to his credit, too, even at this point, he might have known, and they'll reveal to nobody, that he was starting to feel a little off at this point. And, you know, he kept it to himself all the way to almost the bitter end at this point. Yeah. His cough would have been something standard. Walt had coughing fits. But you know what? Everyone smoked like that at that time. Mm-hmm. So, but it's entirely possible that Walt may have thought, I need to focus my efforts on the one crowning achievement at this point. And it's possible that the $9 million may have not been a backbreaker because, you know, if Walt had a good idea, he rarely let money get in the way. You know, that was Roy's idea to figure the money out. I'm the imaginer. I'm the guy who comes up with the ideas. You figure out the funding. So, you know, I'm only spitballing here and throwing things out that he might have thought, well, I have maybe one project left in me, a good one. Let's focus our efforts here. So,
yeah.
Outstanding. And like you said, so what I uncovered was these blueprints. So it went on the auction block in 2015, and it did fetch $27,000. And I'm just going to pull bits and pieces from this article. And they were found in, frankly, like all things, it seems, Disney of incredible value. They were found mothballed at an Orange County woman's home for decades. So her father worked at Disney years ago, and she had this stuff in the garage, never thought much of it. And she had some other things too. She had some stuff from Disneyland at the same period in the early 60s, and of accounting how much money the park was making every day at the time. So these pieces went to auction, and periodically, you know, people are like, oh, well, we'll never find more like this. Until they find, you know, Mark Davis, you know, has all of a sudden these documents and they go to auction and whatnot, you know, whatnot. But yeah, incredible. So if you Google, I mean, if you just Google the words St. Louis and Disney and you see some of this documentation, it's like, why didn't they build this? Of course, 2020, you know, we're looking at it right now, right, retroactively. But
well, I thought, though, too, like this would have been a huge thing initially. But would this have had staying power, though, like in the light of Walt Disney World and other theme park attractions? Like, you know, when Six Flags was built in St. Louis, like, would this have actually stayed and kept its interest as it was originally planned to be designed? Or would it have kind of fizzled? I think it would have had to develop into something more to be successful, or else it would have just become like any other mall in America these days that are just lucky to be surviving.
Correct. So that's a great question. So let's just explore that for a bit here. Obviously, the first few years are the honeymoon phase, and everyone wants to see it. And there would always be some portion of this, and I'm only taking this this image in my head from what I see in practicality right now. There will always be some portion focused on the history of St. Louis. And there will always be some portion. If you've not gone to the Arch recently, when was the last time you were at the Arch, Tim?
Probably about 5 or 6 years ago.
It looks nothing like you remember it right now. And in fact, the entrance is different. And the entire basement floor, outside of where they actually lift you up, is an entire history of urban development, city of St. Louis, from nothing to what it is right now. And in fact, it's amazing. It is a history teacher's dream to spend hours down there. It's amazing. So there will always be a historical context. But yeah, even like Walt Disney World, like Fantasyland, like Disneyland, like Epcot, you know what seems really desirable? It has a lifespan. It has a 15 or 20 year lifespan. So in fact, he said potentially we didn't want these characters to be used here, or we weren't too sure. In order to regentrify the park, it would have had to have evolved and adapted. Would it be successful? Tim, if you think about that location and you think about the major cities within a 6.5 hour drive, it encompasses the cities of Milwaukee, Chicago, Springfield, Indianapolis, Louisville. I mean, you think about Kansas City. You think about the cities that are close by, and these are in the top 25 largest cities of the country. Not to mention, air flights relatively cheap into the city of St. Louis, because it's halfway in between everybody. It's not coast to coast, you know? So flights from Denver to St. Louis, affordable. Chicago to St. Louis, very affordable. Yeah. It's affordable and it's easy to access. So would it have succeeded? I think, yeah. I think the staying power, especially knowing how Disney operates, and then the retroactive purchasing of land afterwards, you know, to mm-hmm. add on here, yeah. and the hotel expansions, and all of a sudden you've got the Disney complex at Mid-America, and you're like, yeah. whoa, all of a sudden, you know, you combine that with the national park, the Arch, you combine that with the other development, and you realize, yeah, I think it would have been killer. It would have been killer.
Yeah. I certainly would love to have something closer to home when I get that Disney itch like I do right now.
Oh, you and me combined. That'd be a day trip for me and you, right, Tim?
Yeah, absolutely.
We'd pick up, we'd pop on some music, be down there in 3 hours, and we'd be good, you know?
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
So outstanding. So, you know, this is just one piece. We mentioned there was plans for some development by the Niagara Falls area, and that had little less development than this. There was plans for Walt Disney's America over by Virginia, by Washington, and that had much greater detail in development for the Mineral King Ski Resort, and that had great development. So, you know, I know a lot of podcasts have touched on this, but when you get your hands on it and you actually see the granular steps, like the blueprints, it's like, oh, yeah. you know, why? Why could it not have happened?
Yeah.
But it's just fun living through those days, and I can't recommend visiting the city enough. So if you've not been to the city of St. Louis, if you're close by for just a day's drive or half it is completely worth your time. I guarantee a week's entertainment, easy peasy. And I've been there now. I have 15, 20 times in vacation, and every time feels like the very first time.
Yeah. So. People in St. Louis are nice. I always enjoy the people down there. Like mm-hmm. unless you're wearing Cubs gear, maybe not so much.
No, for sure. You
know. Blue, but Cubs yeah. fans. Cubs fans can enjoy St. Louis as well, so
they can, absolutely. All right, so Tim, if anyone had any questions or want to know like where we pulled the information from, what's the best way? And I'm looking still here at stlouismag.com. What's the best way for us to people to reach out to us?
Well, I am on Facebook, Tim Vanswall on Facebook, but probably the easiest way is through our EDCOT Facebook group that is associated with the WW Review. So I'm very active in there. That's about the only place I really want to go on Facebook is EDCOT. I spend most of my time on there and avoiding other
real life,
not so place nice places on the internet, because EDCOT is a community that is of wonderful people, and we just all have a common love of Disney. So,
and we laugh, and there's no sarcasm or snark. We cut that out. The world right now seems to be very contentious. That's not what we're about. So if you're interested in joining, please do. EDCOT. Thank you for your time today, buddy. You aced it as I expected, Tim.
I appreciate it. Thanks. I never know, you know, how I'm going to come across. So this one worked out. It's like every lesson I ever teach in school. Like, it might fall flat or it might be great, but I'll do another one tomorrow.
That's right. We mentioned the last show about reviews, so we're going to start that contest very soon. I've got really two cool prizes designed for this, and I wanted to introduce it earlier in the show, but honestly, the show is just so interesting, I just put it off for right now. So listen for the next show. We're going to reveal what the contest will be for our, I guess you'll say, our review criteria here coming up. So anyways, for my buddy Tim and for myself, I'd like to thank you for listening. Have a great day, everybody.
Bye.